This is Afternoon Pancakes. My name is Jared Malott, and I believe this is episode 5 of season 2. And here we are on Thursday night. I'm starting recording this right before the kickoff of the Thursday night game because I figure if I have to suffer through this, it might as well be while I'm talking about all things Colts. Here on Afternoon Pancakes, there's a likeness to one of all Colts fans' favorite players, is Quentin Nelson. And as our podcast is sort of named, we typically also record the podcast in the afternoon, so there's also that. I'll be flying solo tonight. Stephen Reed and I just kind of missed each other this week is all. And I feel like with a game coming up tonight, if I can get this podcast up, say before like 10 p.m., it'll give you something to listen to on the back half of this Dolphins-Jags Thursday night football, which literally could end up being the Dirt Bowl, right? The two worst teams in the NFL. Although I think the Jags are a little better than we give them credit for, and that says a lot about the Colts, given that they did lose to the Jags. And again, and like I said, I didn't say that they're any good. Just want to clarify that. I didn't say they're any good. But here we are, Colts, of course, 1-1, second in the AFC South, taking on the Jets on Sunday. In a game, they're 10.5 point favorites. Game's at 4:05, by the way, so when the game doesn't start at 1 o'clock, I don't expect to hear anything from the people I care about. right? What's going on? Where's the Colts game, man? Is it blacked out locally? No, bro. It starts at 4:05. I bet you that's a phone call I get. And I'm mostly being funny. My friends aren't that bad. But yeah, really, the Colts are in a sort of enviable position, and one, that regardless of the statistics, I think we can all say very, very much, those of us that are invested in this organization can tell you that no matter what you've seen on the field, I don't believe you've seen the best that this team this year has to offer. And I understand I'm saying that in light of the Colts losing Marlon Mack, of losing Paris Campbell, of having Rocky Sin not play last week. The reality is, I think, you know, I kind of posited on Twitter the other day, what if we could just get the Colts week 2 defensive performance? Remember, if you will, with me, Kirk Cousins was like 11 for 23 for 113 yards and had 3 interceptions, was sacked 3 or 4 times and hit a bunch. If you can get that kind of performance out of your defense, then all I'd really kind of joked about was I would like to see Nyheim Hines have another good week. And this isn't because he's on almost every fantasy team I have. And it would be really nice if he would actually produce enough that I could put him in the flex or even start him. So come on, Colts, do it for your boy one time. I'm kidding, of course. No, but think about the way that the offense looked there in week 2. What if they just had that big play potential? And I think that's something that a sort of football term that isn't talked about often is identifying the players on each team that have the biggest play potential. And we kind of saw that, and we kind of known that. You know, for example, DeAndre Hopkins had been the really big play, big playmaker. Well, Hopkins and Watson were the big playmakers for the Texans for years, obviously until the Texans gave their football program to a coach that couldn't win. They gave their organization to one anyway, and he traded DeAndre Hopkins for a washed-up running back. The reality is, with the Colts now, they're actually deep enough that I of course think they'd be better with a healthy, productive Marlon Mack, and that this season is lesser for him not having been here. And every game Paris Campbell misses, it feels like is being robbed from us, right? It's not quite what we want to see at the act. You know, you want to see the peak, right, of what your team is capable of. And while I do really want to lead with the Colts, for all things considering, football had a fantastic outing on Sunday. The special teams game has much improved. The offense, whilst productive, did kick field goals in lieu of scoring touchdowns. And remember, I've been a big proponent of late last year, specifically on our podcast and in other media, have said it very much feels like the first team to kick a field goal loses. And I want to point out that I am undefeated, I believe, so far this year. I could be wrong. In Colts games, the first team to kick a field goal just loses the game. Because you're in scoring position and you don't convert. And keep in mind, the good teams are going to convert scoring opportunities into touchdowns more than like 60% of the time. So when your team goes 2-for-4 in the red zone and kicks field goals the other two times, it's not great. You know, you want to see them score touchdowns on, you know, for example, 3-of-4 would be a big improvement. Just and that's what I think the difference between Philip Rivers and Jacoby Brissett is that I think Jacoby could get you to 8-and-8 all day. I just don't think that he could do 2 and 3 games better than that, and that's what's going to be required to get us into the playoffs. And actually give us an opportunity to make a run at a championship. And I say that with an expanded playoff, so it's like it's not nearly as short a route as it was. I think it's an additional game now. But really, the Colts, again, on paper, look a lot better than they do when you actually sit down and watch the game. You see a lot of young players for the Colts playing in very important scenarios. And that's one of the reasons the Colts have been pretty susceptible to big plays. And when you really have those gotta-have-it conversions, and teams are able to convert those pretty readily on the Colts and extend drives and keep themselves in games they have no business in being in, and scoring, for example, rather quickly on the Colts, by the way, late in that Jacksonville game. The Colts, of course, first in the league defensively in yards, in terms of how little yards they've given up. And then the offense, of course, is one of the better offenses in the NFL, and really does have really the ability to score at will. And it's just about that developing. Philip Rivers and the Colts offense continue to develop that rapport. You've seen a budding relationship between Mo Alie-Cox and Philip Rivers, right? And clear that's evidenced by Mo Alie-Cox's near perfect game he played, according to Pro Football Focus, and had over 100 yards receiving, and is an integral part of this offense and its ability to just, again, move the ball at will. Additionally, we kind of got to still talk about T.Y. Hilton, kind of limited again, had a big drop in an important moment. It's still being relied on, and I don't expect these drops early in the season for T.Y. Hilton to expect to impact anyone's trust of him. It will just be difficult to trust him should this continue, right? Should he continue to drop the ball in big plays, which hasn't been his norm. You know, T.Y. has been incredibly reliable. You know, it's one of the things about the NFL that's great is they always talk about your size, right? And how could this guy play in the NFL? And he's so small. And then you look at a guy like T.Y. that, for what it's worth, played a lot, made a lot of great plays, and has done a lot of great things for the Colts. and has done it at for a long time without missing a bunch of time. You know what I mean? He's always there. And we joke that he kind of disappears in some games, but when they're being forced to, double cover you effectively, you're actually doing your offense a favor. You should be making it easier. If they're over committing on TY, it should open up someone else, and that sort of feeds into the Colts philosophy, that Frank Reich and Chris Ballard have built, is that this team is about more than one person. And obviously, when you draft and you build an organization where you want the best possible player every position, you're going to wind up with multiple all pros, multiple all guys that are going to go to the Pro Bowl. You're going to have guys like Quentin Nelson and Darius Leonard that when you're drafting based on who you think has the most potential, right, that's remaining. And it's, of course, the Colts have gotten lucky, and it's becoming more readily apparent with the continued development of guys like Ben Banigou, who guy just there's a lot of players that are really coming along, and obviously you got guys like Grover Stewart balling out, Justin Houston and DeForest Buckner are really just an outstanding defensive line group. And then, of course, you got really good linebackers, right? Where the Colts are in an enviable position, and which is fa those that foundation that the Colts have, that really good defensive line, that really good core linebackers, that's essential to maintain and develop for a successful organization. And if you just look at all of the great teams over time, think about the Baltimore Ravens, think about the New England Patriots. Even the Steelers, all those organizations were not just successful because they had a decent quarterback. Let's not pull any punches, right? They've had great quarterbacks, man. But what's foundational and something that they've maintained is the strength of their defensive line and their linebackers, their ability to pursue the football and limit, those first, second, and third down plays and forcing the ball either in turnover or forcing the t other team to punt, right? The longer the Colts, the any Colts, any defense really, period. I keep saying Colts, but n not at all. The longer any defense is on the field, the worse it is, right? The more time that defense spends on the field, the lower the likelihood that the offense of the other team wins. And that's, of course, in addition to the Colts needing to convert more drives into touchdowns, right? Which we've already kind of established. The Colts need to convert more of their offensive drives into touchdowns. We also can acknowledge that the learning curve for going from being able to get into field goal range and kick a field goal, and then actually being able to convert and score a touchdown is really the difference between 8-8 and 10-6. It really is. And that's the thing we're going to keep harping on based on what we see on the field. So here through the first, I don't know how long I've been on, about 15 minutes here, we kind of talked about the Colts week one. Or week two, I'm sorry. Home win, right? Going into playing the Jets, and want to. While we're here, let's talk about the things that were really meaningful, right? The impact players for the Colts. I think we really have talked about them directly, but really the tail of the tape says. Yeah, 11 for 26. Kirk Cousins was 11 for 26 for 113 yards, three interceptions, and three sacks. His quarterback rating was 9.4, which is crazy given the prior week, the Colts let Gardner Minshew go 19 for 20 for 178 yards and three touchdowns and a perfect passer rating. This is the difference between letting someone get a free release at the line of scrimmage and actually giving up and giving them a shove in the first couple yards to kind of take them off their timing. Because if you watch, that's how a lot of these teams play now. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of these teams, this is how it is. They don't have the ability to pass the ball really downfield unless guys get free releases, because these athletes are longer and leaner, and when they're longer and leaner, they tip over easier, right? They're not as able to run through anything. And that's certainly not to disrespect anybody. It's just the reality is, if you give a really good athlete a free release, he's going to run away from you. But if you actually get up on him and get your hands on him, you could take him off that free release, you know. And then, of course, to keep it moving, Phillip Rivers, 19 for 25, 214 yards, a touchdown, an interception, and two sacks, quarterback rating of 36.4. Obviously, not in terms of yards, touchdown, and interceptions, not great. But one of the things that's got to be pointed out, Phillip Rivers has completed more than 75% of his passes in both of the first two games. And he's not taking the check down. He's putting the ball in the second and third level. He's hitting his first reads. He just needs to develop better rapport with T.Y. Hilton. And this is a 500-yard-a-game offense, easy. And Phillip is throwing for 300 yards. And the Colts are probably extending these drives, scoring touchdowns, and really, really putting the whoop on people. And then in addition to that, the Colts' rushing game produced a 100-yard rusher. Jonathan Taylor, in his first start as an Indianapolis Colt, 26 carries, 101 yards, and a touchdown. And all of those were fantastic to watch a young kid really just show you that he knows how to play this game. The Vikings aren't not a slouch. It's not like he did this against nobody. By the way, Williams with a nice touchdown catch there in the pass from Fitzmagic. And then on the other side of the ball, Dalvin Cook, 14 carries for 63 yards. That's great for the Colts defense. Again, as a credit to that defensive line, those linebackers, and obviously Kenny Moore for making plays. But the Colts defense was really impressive. And then the offense, also impressive, but just not, I'm sorry, boys, just not as, I'm not as impressed. I want more touchdowns, right? I want less field goals. Then that's not to take away from Rodrigo. Hey, man, do your thing. Colts win is Colts win, right? But if we're going to talk about it, I want 100-yard receiver and 100-yard tight end and 100-yard rusher. You know, I want 4, 5, 6 touchdowns a game, because I think that's what's going to take to get over the hump right now in the AFC. Baltimore and Kansas City can score touchdowns in the red zone. And that's the difference between the Colts and getting over the hump in the AFC, is you not only have to score, you have to score touchdowns. And you got to do it more than 2 times a game. Zach Pascal, of course, catching the lone touchdown and through the air for the Colts. Jonathan Taylor getting a touchdown on the ground. And then, you know, Darius Leonard, you know, six tackles, had a tackle for loss. Kari Willis, Kenny Moore, and TJ Carey all had interceptions. And then onto the Jets, right? And when it comes to the Jets, when it comes to the statistics, okay, I look at defense. Right, I want to know the team that I'm playing against, how bad is their defense? And the way they primarily rank defenses, just so everyone knows, is by yards, typically. Just kind of depends. But typically, they rank them by yards. Okay, and let's see. The Colts, by yards, have given up the least yards in the NFL by over 200 yards. So, remember when I told you there's different ways to rank defenses, I did not say the Colts were awesome, but they are ranked first in the NFL for least yards given up at 416. Okay. Conversely, the Jets are 19th in the NFL, 763 yards through two games. They give up a full yard, 1.1 yards, more than 1.1 yards per game per touch than the Colts do. They have generated three turnovers. Colts have generated three turnovers. But they've given up 55 first downs to the Colts, 29. So defense is a little more susceptible. They've played a little more. They do have given up four touchdowns to the Colts, three. They have an interception. The Colts have three. So, yeah, their defense not quite where the Colts are. And then, of course, there's turnover percentage is a good one. Percentage of drives ending in a turnover. Colts are fifth in the league. Jets are actually 11th. So they do, the defense does have a propensity to turn the ball over. That's one of the things that you can live and die with Phillip Rivers, is because Phillip Rivers will turn the ball over and win you the game. There are plenty of quarterbacks in the NFL that if they turn the ball over, they're going to lose because it destroys their mental. You know, there's guys like Cam Newton that figured it out that you got to have confidence, you know, smile in the rain, right? You've just got to, wow, he's really put his foot in the ground. Robinson with a nice run there. The Jets, though, less prone than to turn the ball over than the Colts. So I could go out on a limb here and say I doubt the Colts turn the ball over, but it's Phillip Rivers, man. He's just a little. It's hard to say, man. He's just a little bit of a gunslinger. And then as far as passing defense goes. The Colts are middle of the league, having let opposing quarterbacks throw complete 65% of their passes, right? So you've had a very Jekyll and Hyde version of Colts secondary so far this year. And last week's performance is especially notable because the Colts are a little light, right? No Malik Hooker, no Rock Ya-Sin. Here's the thing. The Jets are 30th in the NFL in opposing pass quarterback completion percentage that they've allowed. So their secondary is terrible. This bodes well for the Colts, even without Paris Campbell and Marlon Mack. Keep in mind, Conley dropped that wide open pass. The reality is, if you're allowing teams to score and complete a high percentage of their passes, you're playing from behind a lot. When you're playing from behind a lot, guys get injured a lot more often. Soft tissue injuries happen when guys overexert themselves. As a result, Sam Darnold is on wide receivers like 4, 5, and 6 or worse. So this bodes particularly well for the Colts defensively have a good matchup. From what I understand, the Jets are without their center and one of their tackles. They don't have any wide receivers. I don't believe they have Le'Veon Bell. So they're just really limited at offensive weapons. So I expect an anemic output there. And then all things considered, obviously we're devastated, right? We don't have Marlon Mack or Paris Campbell. But all things considered, the Colts should, with the budding relationship between Mo Alie-Cox and Phillip Rivers, right? You get the old school Antonio Gates vibe out of that relationship. And then turn on T.Y. Hilton. Turn on Nyheim Hines. And if you can get all three of those guys involved in the game, in addition to getting Jonathan Taylor over 100 yards, my goal would be to get 5 targets minimum to T.Y. Hilton, Mo Alie-Cox, to make sure these guys are getting fed, to give them as many opportunities as possible, because the Jets' secondary is doo-doo. And then let's look at their rush defense, right? Let's look at who the best and worst are. The Colts are 5th in the NFL in yards per game per rush defense. The Jets are 25th. They give up 140 yards a game, almost double what the Colts do. So I think And they also allow 4.6 yards a rush. The Colts 4.2. Let's see. There's any other fun statistics. Scoring defense. Points a game. The Colts are probably back end of the NFL, I wonder. Colts are 8th. 19 points a game. The Jets are 24th. So again, the Colts have a better defense and then have a better matchup. So they're presenting a better defensive opponent, and they have a lesser defensive opponent when they're on offense, right? So kind of looking good either way. And then what we want to make sure we talk about, we just talked about the defense at length, right? We want to make sure we're saying, hey, who's really doing really well, specifically like quarterbacks, right? From my money, Philip Rivers just doesn't have the touchdowns, right? We want to see, obviously we want to see him throw less interceptions, right? That would be great. But how's his completion percentage? First of all, his completion percentage, which is what we're going to sort by when we're looking at quarterbacks, is 3rd in the NFL. So for all those people saying he's washed, that's not Jacoby Brissett. Jacoby is more likely to throw complete 50% of his passes than he is 75. He does have 2 touchdowns and 3 interceptions, which you would like to see change. You would like to see him throw 3 or 4 touchdowns and no picks. And then you look at his yards per game, and he's 8th in the NFL. You look at his rate, so his quarterback rating, he's 18th at 92.3. You look at his QBR, is he that bad? He's not even on the page. They're like 25th. But anyway, that's QBR is ESPN's total quarterback rating. I don't know how I feel about that. But then there's other relevant statistics: net yards per attempt, per pass attempt, and Philip Rivers is 8th in the NFL through 2 games. And then if you adjust the net yards per attempt, where is he? Again, like I said, he's 19th. So that means that's taken yards away for dump offs. But his sack percentage, he's one of the least sacked quarterbacks in the NFL. The largely positive things to say out of the offense, just would like to see less turnovers and more touchdowns, which is a given, right? Like, these are things we already know. And then we want to make sure we talk about what else happened in the NFL in week 2, specifically within the AFC South, right? For the Houstons, they have started off, their first 4 games, I would argue, are probably the first most difficult in the NFL, or at least in the AFC. They started out again at Kansas City. They played in Arrowhead and lost 34-20. Then they got to play at home against the Ravens. They lost 33-16. Now they go to Heinz Field on Sunday, 1:00. I think there's a very real chance they could be 0-3. I would be surprised if they won, but I just said just surprised, not, you know what I mean? I don't have terribly high expectations. And then let's look at their game, right? And then additionally, of course, the Titans beat the Jags 33-30 at home, right? So there's your second in a row division game for the Jags, right? So they start out with the Colts, then they play at the Titans. And then let's look at the box score. Garner Minshew, 30 for 45, 339 yards, and 3 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, and sacked twice. So Gardner Minshew has 6 touchdowns and 2 interceptions through 2 games, so he's legit. Completed 66% of his passes, over 300 yards. Of course, you don't like seeing 2 interceptions, but when you... Yeah, I think you just stay with that. You got to win the game for me to be okay with you throwing a pick. Ryan Tannehill, 18 for 24. That's 66% again. 239 yards, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions, sacked once. QBR 90, and also won. So keep in mind, Garner Minshew lost the heads-up matchup. He may have, like, thrown for more statistics, but throwing for more statistics and losing the game, like, that's the difference. The 2 picks, that's why he lost. Tannehill didn't turn the ball over, that's why they won. That you can see without even looking at the rest of the box score. And then, of course, James Robinson for the Jags had himself a Sunday, right? 16 carries for 100 yards and a touchdown, including a 39-yard run. Derrick Henry, though, 25 carries for 84 yards, less than 4 yards a carry. Let's see. Where did all the touchdowns come from? Jonnu Smith, 4 receptions, 84 yards, 2 touchdowns. Adam Humphries, 5 catches, 48 yards and a touchdown. Corey Davis, 3 for 36 and a touch. Fersker, 4 for 45. So the Island of Misfit Toys there for Tennessee, I'm afraid. And then Chark, who's not playing tonight. Keelan Cole, Chris Conley, Eifert, Chenault. All, you know, getting some targets there. And then, of course, want to make sure we check in. So we talked about the Jags and the Titans. Talked about the Texans. Oh, let's see what happened in their game, where their breakdown was. So what we want to talk about when we talk about our opponents, right, is we want to say what happened in that game. Well, let's find out. Lamar Jackson, 18 for 24, 204 yards and a touchdown, sacked 4 times. 66% completion percentage, 200 yards passing. That's okay. A little over 10 yards of completion. Deshaun Watson, 25 for 36 for 275. A touchdown and interception, sacked 4 times, and also lost. So keep in mind, that's 2 games in a row within our division, and the winning quarterback did not throw an interception. So that's important to keep in mind with a quarterback that's kind of iffy on turning the ball over. And then the Ravens rushed 37 times for 230 yards. That's a problem. The Houston defense cannot stop the run. That bodes well for the Colts with a healthy rushing attack. And then the Houston basically had 17. Well, they had 17 carries for 51 yards. That's why they lost. They got run all over, and then they couldn't produce on their end. And then it just forced Deshaun Watson to throw more. And we all know the more attempts, the more mistakes. So that's why Houston lost, is because they do not have, they can't stop a rushing attack. And yeah, that's gonna be a big problem for Houston. If they're not able to stop the run, that just lets teams hold the ball, right? And then so we've kind of so far we talked about the Colts week 2. We talked about what happened in the rest of the AFC South. Now what we're going to do is kind of look ahead and say, hey, what do we think is going to happen with the rest of the NFL, right? So we'll do the Colts, Jets kind of last because we've kind of already talked about them. But we're going to finish this podcast kind of talking about what we think is going to happen in each of the games. So, of course, before we get into that, we want to make sure that, if you're on social media – and we're kind of in our darkest hour, right? But make sure you follow the podcast at Pod Pancake, P-O-D Pancake. And then make sure that if you would like, you could follow me at Likely Alien. And if you want to follow Stephen Reed, who's typically my co-host, it's Nice Reed Steve, okay? R-E-E-D Steve on Twitter. Primarily is where you could find and you could see what our other, kind of thoughts about football and life, I suppose. But most importantly, like I said, just make sure you follow Pod Pancake to get our podcast, and then you want to make sure you can always find our podcast by searching for Stampede Blue Podcasts just about wherever you get a podcast. So Google, iTunes, Spotify. A lot of people have come to me and said, "Hey man, how do I find this podcast?" And there are multiple ways to get it, but your best bet is to kind of get linked up with the Stampede Blue podcast network. Our team has a few podcasts. There's probably four or five podcasts. I'm just one of them, Steven and I, typically. And keep in mind, I was going to predict the Jags to win tonight, so I will absolutely take a 0-1 here. They're getting beat 14 to nothing with 2 minutes left in the first quarter, and just got kicked off too. So like I said, I'll even take the L should they lose, because I thought that Jacksonville would win at home, because I feel like the Colts are better than the Dolphins. And then on Sunday, the Bears play at the Falcons, and I'm gonna go against the grain because the Bears are a favorite here and take the Atlanta to get a win at home. They barely lost to Dallas, who's a better team than the Bears, and I think that they kind of get off of it because they kind of been up against it thus far. The Rams play at the Bills, and I'm a Josh Allen stan, so I think Buffalo gets the 3-0, it beats the Rams, and I think that's like a 1-point game. So again, I think Los Angeles is like +1, and I think Buffalo's -1, or it might be flip-flopped, but I would definitely take Buffalo to win at home. And then Cleveland, I think, is getting like 6 points at home against the Washington football team. I fully expect the Bengals to win. I just don't know by how many. I think they've just got a better ground game than Washington, and I think that bodes well for them here in week three. The Titans play at the Vikings, and it's hard for me to think that the Tennessee Titans have fallen off, having just won by 33-30 is a big game and a big win. So I think Tennessee goes to Minnesota and wins. And then the Raiders play at the Patriots, and I while I hate picking them to win, New England is gonna win. I just think straight up. I think this is more interesting than people think. Because I think there's a pretty big spread here, like 9 or 10 points. And then the 49ers play at the Giants, and I think San Francisco is just a better organization, and they're just gonna win on talent. And then the Bengals play at the Eagles. I think the Eagles win. And again, I think this game is just close because I think it's 5 or 6 points, and I think it's a coin flip, but I think the Eagles win at home. And like I said, the Texans play at the Steelers, and I think the Steelers very well could probably beat you by 10. And I'm saying that with a straight face. I'm saying a big catch and run there. Man, that was a great Laviska Shenault. You're not supposed to bench this guy tonight, by the way. He just had a nice catch and run, probably 20, 30 yards. And then the Jets, or we'll do Jets Colts last. The Carolina Panthers play at the Los Angeles Chargers. And obviously, I'm going to take the Chargers to win at home. And I would pretty much take any team coming from the East Coast flying out to the West Coast to lose on the road. It's just so hard to go across the country, lose all that time, and then have to do something what, again, you're going to hear me say that a lot, an Olympic level, right? It's going to take a lot. And then Tampa plays at Denver. And if Drew Locke were healthy, I would think Denver wins this game at home in a thriller. And now I just get to be sad and say, sure, man, the Bucks are, 2-1 or whatever. The Lions play at the Arizona Cardinals, and I gotta say, I feel bad. My boss, Josh Fields, is my agency owner, is a huge Lions fan, and they're about to be 0-3 and lose to the Cardinals on the road. I hate to be that guy, but Kyler Murray is legit the rise of the black quarterback, right? And then, speaking of the which, Sunday night, Sunday, well, the 4:25 game, the Cowboys at the Seattle Seahawks in CenturyLink Field, two of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. Again, the rise of the black quarterback, right? And I'm really happy about that matchup particularly. I think is going to be fantastic. I hope they score 75 points. And I think that if there's a game that they could do that, it's this one. And if they don't do it in this one, I think they could do it at the night game. And talk about two of the best quarterbacks of all time. Sunday Night Football. Oh, by the way, so I got to pick a winner between Dallas and Seattle. It's difficult. It's hard to win in Seattle, so I'm going to take Seattle to win at home. And then the Green Bay Packers play at the New Orleans Saints. And I just think the Packers are a more complete football team at this point, and I trust Aaron Rodgers more than I would Drew Brees, and that's saying a lot. I'm a Purdue alum, right? But I Drew Brees, I got a little question him with no or limited Michael Thomas. You got to really wonder. And then Monday Night Football again, Kansas City at Baltimore. The rise of the black quarterback. That's five we talk about in 3 games. That are top five or six in the NFL right now in terms of just greatness on the field. The Kansas City Chiefs play at the Baltimore Ravens in primetime on Monday night. And of course, the Ravens are the favorite and they're the home team, and I think they're going to win. I think they're going to rush for 200 yards. And it's just very difficult to beat a team that forces you to be one-dimensional on offense and then can grind you out on the other side of the ball, right? They force you to be one-dimensional when they're on defense, when you're on offense, and then when they have the ball, they could just run the ball down your throat, and there's nothing you could do about it because they have a varied rushing attack, a powerful rushing attack. So yeah, that's kind of who I, without looking at the odds and just kind of looking at the schedule, that's kind of who I think wins the games this week. And again, I made that video with my wife. I probably said most of the same things. Just Taylor doesn't like it when I go at, talk at length about the games because she doesn't watch them all. But anyway, while we're here, we want to, of course, thank all the support that we get is great. It would, of course, be great to hear from you. Like I said, the easiest way to do that would be to just tell me we're terrible on our on Pod Pancake or, contact me at Likely Alien, or you could probably find me on any social media, probably LinkedIn or Facebook. Although I try to not use those platforms. I'm more comfortable on Twitter. If you have anything for me, of course I'll post this through Megaphone, which will upload it all over the internet, and then I'll post it in an article on Stampede Blue's website and try to get that up in the next hour. And like I said, of course, I'm sad anytime I'm not on a podcast with Stephen Reed, but I hope that I'm able to guide the ship when he's not here, and then we're not just a rudderless boat, right? We kind of want to be putting out a similar flavor of content even without Stephen Reed, and I get he brings a lot to the table, and I understand that we are lesser without him. But there are gonna it's gonna come times when I'm just gonna have to sit down and pump out an episode because I owe it to you, and the show must go on, right? So this is again been episode 5 of season 2 of Afternoon Pancakes. Again, my name is Jared Malott. We're missing my co-host Stephen Reed. Have a great week. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the games. Most importantly, enjoy the games. And we'll see you after next week's game. Go Colts. Oh, and the Colts beat the Jets, and it's not close.